could, I guess.
All right.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome everyone to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is February 6, 2018. We have a short, this session's hearings are only an hour and 45 minutes, not 2 hours and 45 minutes, so I'm going to try to talk really quickly and give everyone else a chance to talk. In case there are new people in the room that have new jobs since last year when this committee met, we all remain the same, but we'll do a quick round of introductions, starting with Representative Noble, your district.
Thank you. Ron Noble, I'm the representative from District 24, which is the south side of McMinnville up to Hillsborough High School, and all of the beautiful farmland and vineyards in between.
Thank you.
Dwayne Stark, House District 4 in Southern Oregon, Eagle Point, Central Point, Rogue River, Gold Hill, White City.
Tana Sanchez, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland.
Cassie Susi, LPRO analyst for this committee.
Thank you. Alyssa Kinnegar, House District 46, Southeast, Northeast Portland. No beautiful fields, but some nice parks.
And Yulson, State Representative out of the Albany area.
Chris Gorsuch, District 49, North Gresham, and my colleague, Representative Peluso, is south of me in all of the rest of Gresham. I have Wood Village, Troutdale, Fairview, and a little tiny, tiny bit of Portland.
I'm Mike Nierman from House District 23, which is 99W.
Wow, just the highlight.
Mark Meek from House District 40, Oregon City, Gladstone, Jennings Lodge, Johnson City, unincorporated Clackamas County, and home of the beautiful Willamette Falls.
Beautiful. Mm. Representative Nierman, I hope you're on the Transportation Committee.
And on the Ways and Means.
Okay, and then our committee assistant. We have a new committee assistant helping somebody right now. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Danielle. I forgot my nameplate, but I'm Danielle Ross.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for...
And Madam Chair, you might point out that former Representative Barbara Ross is over there checking in on us there, if you've noticed.
Thank you. You served together?
No.
Nope.
No,
sure. Delighted to see you, former Representative Barbara Ross. Okay, so Vice Chair Olson, we are going to adopt the committee rules, which are exactly the same as last year. Could you please introduce them?
Okay, well, I just moved in that we adopt the same rules from last year. No, I
wish it were that easy.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 6, 2018. Is there any discussion? Questions? Okay. Seeing none, Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Yes.
Representative Peluso?
Excused.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kinnegar?
Aye. The committee rules are adopted. And I'm now going to open a public hearing. Impossible work session. I'm going to reverse the order here because we have fewer people to testify on HJR 201, Municipal Bonding Constitutional Amendment, and I want to say for the record, we are not going to be voting on any bills today, so we are going to carry over HJR 201 to Thursday, February 8th at 8 a.m. Okay, so Cassie, could you please read a summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 201 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to be referred to voters, allowing municipalities such as counties, cities, or towns to use certain bonded indebtedness to finance capital costs of affordable housing. The joint resolution specifies requirements for the measure, referred to voters to describe affordable housing for the purposes above, and requires the principal amount of indebtedness for a jurisdiction to not exceed 0.5% of the real market value of all property in the jurisdiction.
Okay, great. So first up, could we please have Allison McIntosh, Harvey Rogers, and Aaron Doyle.
Are you going to let us have the opportunity to really grill these people?
Yes.
Oh, good.
This is at least the third time they've been in front of us, so I think they're used to you, Vice Chair Olson.
We are ready to be grilled, especially Harvey.
Especially Harvey.
Chair Kindergeier, Vice Chair Sanchez, Vice Chair Olson, my name is Allison McIntosh. I'm here today on behalf of the Housing Alliance to express our strong support for HJR 201. As you know, the Housing Alliance is a coalition of more than 80 organizations from all parts of the state, and our members have come together with the knowledge that housing opportunity is the foundation on which all of our success is built. We represent a diverse set of voices from local jurisdictions, residents, nonprofit housing developers, and organizations in every corner of the state. And we believe that all Oregonians need a safe and stable place to call home. Today, unfortunately, we know that that is not reality. We simply don't have enough affordable homes for residents who need them, and vacancy rates have dropped all over Oregon. Last year, during the school year, over 22,500 kids experienced homelessness at some point during the school year, so we really need to act. We have many tools at our disposal to address our affordable housing crisis, and HJR 201 seeks to add one more tool, additional flexibility for bonds issued by local jurisdictions for the purposes of building more affordable homes. Today, local jurisdictions can and have issued general obligation bonds for affordable housing. In 2016, voters in the city of Portland approved a $258 million bond for affordable homes. However, our Constitution limits how those bonds can be used, and Harvey is the technical expert, so I'm going to let him talk mostly about that. But just want to say the kind of resulting of that means that we can't blend funding sources and that jurisdictions have to own and control the housing built with those bonds. As you all well know, the vast majority of affordable housing today is built with multiple funding sources: tax credits, state bond dollars, document reporting fee, other resources. And with additional flexibility, any local jurisdiction considering asking voters to approve bonds could build substantially more affordable housing by leveraging these other resources: federal dollars, state dollars, and private dollars. Perhaps more importantly, smaller local jurisdictions without dedicated housing staff could also consider a bond as a potential way to develop more needed homes in their community if they could partner with local developers. HJR 201 would refer to voters an exemption to the prohibition that Harvey will talk about specifically for affordable housing. Any local measure would have to approve the amount of the bonds and approve define affordable housing for the purposes of the bond. We know that our local, state, and federal government must all work together to solve our housing crisis and create more affordable homes, and we believe that HJR 201 is a modest, reasonable change to the Constitution that would address a pressing statewide problem. So we urge your support of HJR 201. Thank you for your time and your service.
Chair Kindergeier, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Harvey Rogers. I'm a lawyer practicing with the private law firm of Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood. We're very fortunate to provide the majority of bond counsel services in the state of Oregon, including many state agencies and local governments. I'm here today representing the city of Portland. And we're all here today because when the voters approved the first Oregon, the only Oregon Constitution in 1857, they included a provision that said no county, city, town, or other municipal corporation, by vote of its citizens or otherwise, shall become a stockholder in any joint company, corporation, or association, whatever, or raise money for, or loan its credit to, or in aid of, any such company, corporation, or association. That's what the Constitution says now. This provision is written in the kind of language that people used in 1857, and they don't use so much anymore, and it's not very clear what it means. Clearly prohibits stock ownership, not clear what else it does, but about 100 years ago, the Oregon Supreme Court considered the case of an Oregon city that wanted to issue general obligation bonds to finance railroad improvements. Now, back then, the railroad coming to town was about as important an economic development project as you can imagine. And the Oregon Supreme Court invalidated the bond issue, said, nope, you can't do that. This provision of the Oregon Constitution prohibits using general obligation bonds to provide those kinds of private improvements. Now, my firm and me, we're what's called nationally recognized bond counsel. We get hired by governments when they want to borrow money because lenders demand an unqualified opinion of bond counsel that if they loan money, they'll have the legal right to get it paid back. We are required to give what's called an unqualified opinion, which means there can't be any significant doubt. And since the Supreme Court about 100 years ago said, issue bonds to finance privately owned facilities, the bonds are no good, we can't give an unqualified opinion under the current state of the law, with the Constitution being the way it is, for affordable housing projects that have private involvement. So the third piece of this is that current affordable housing projects all want to have private involvement. The federal government has a program of low-income housing tax credits. They provide significant funding for affordable housing projects, and the only way you can access those low-income housing tax credits is to have private ownership. There are other players in the affordable housing world, like HUD, that want projects to be owned by non-governmental entities. And then finally, there are lots of private developers who might like to participate in an affordable housing project, but if they're going to participate, they like to own a piece of it. So the current Constitution prevents doing that in a useful and flexible way. So the draft that you have before you cures that. We reviewed it and worked with legislative counsel. We think it's a good draft. The city of Portland supports it, and I'd certainly encourage your support of it. I'd be happy to try and answer questions.
Good morning. Chair Kennegeier, members of the committee. For the record, Erin Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. Please don't ask me technical questions. As you know, the League represents all 241 cities across the state, and many of our communities have been reaching out, seeking advice from the League and others about how they can become a better participant in incentivizing and helping develop affordable housing across the state. We're seeing, I've done in the last few months, a couple of presentations to our coastal communities specifically about what incentive programs that can be locally adopted are out there. And in looking through the list, they're almost all about property tax deferments. And that is a piece of the puzzle, but it's not one that's going to get you financing towards development. It's going to get you long-term cost savings over the life of the deferment, but it's not going to help you get construction costs leveraged. And so we support HJR 201 to provide another means by which cities can leverage their good credit to provide resources to have affordable housing developed. Leveraging other sources of funding is the key way we can partner with folks. We can't really afford to do all of the building of affordable housing as a local government. That's not the best and most effective use of our funds, nor do we have the resources necessarily in every one of our jurisdictions to own and operate affordable housing developments. We would be asking the local voters to make this choice after a considered deliberate public policy discussion over the benefit of using our general obligation bonds in order to leverage the affordable housing and meeting a need in our community. And we think that our local governments will be considerate of what their voters need, what their residents need, what the community needs in order to get affordable units put in place so that we can have all citizens within our jurisdictions in housing as opposed to in moving from couch to couch or in other ways, you know, living in RVs, which is a becoming increasingly common way to deal with it, is not having your, you know, police going out there and shutting down RVs. We would like to see people in safe, secure units. And we work with our school, many of our cities work with school districts to identify students at risk, and they're trying to find affordable housing for those. And by allowing us to have this one more tool in the toolbox, which is oftentimes an overused analogy, but is probably the most appropriate in the building of housing, we need this tool in order to flex even more muscle and get more resources behind affordable housing units. I'm happy to answer as many questions as I possibly can without deferring to Harvey.
Okay, any questions for this panel? Nope, thank you so much. All right, next up we have Mike Kinsella and Barbara Ross. And I don't see anyone else signed up, so we'll call it at that unless anyone has forgot to sign up and wants to join them.
Go ahead. Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Ross. I'm from Portland. I am here today representing the League of Women Voters that urges support for this amendment. We have long been intensely interested in issues of housing and homelessness and the economic straits that many of our citizens find themselves in. You've heard the explanation of what this constitutional amendment would do, and we just urge your support because it would offer local jurisdictions the flexibility they need to use the funds that are available. And currently, jurisdictions, cities, Portland included, doesn't really have the experience in operating, owning and operating large multifamily developments. So they need to be able to partner with people who have that skill and have that experience. And also, we need to be able to partner with other organizations and entities that can provide additional funding so that we can make the most of the money that we have. And so we urge your support. We all know that housing and homelessness are serious issues across this state, and this is just one more tool that you have the capacity through the voters, if they approve this constitutional amendment, to approve and make local governments more able to meet this urgent need. So thank you for the opportunity to comment on this, and we hope you'll all support it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Sanchez, and Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Mike Kinsella, Executive Director of Oregon Locus. Oregon Locus is a coalition of responsible real estate developers and investors throughout the state of Oregon that formed over a year ago to create a voice for walkable, dense development that is economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable. I am here today to voice Oregon Locus's strong support for HJR 201, which asks voters to amend the Oregon Constitution to allow cities to use bonded indebtedness to finance capital costs of affordable housing. We recently were involved in a research study that found the state of Oregon is 155,000 units short. We need to maximize resources to produce needed housing across the state. HJR 201 would provide a needed bridge, an essential tool to allow the private sector of responsible developers to partner with the public sector to produce more needed affordable housing and to meet the state's housing need. Oregon Locus supports this as a measure that leverages public and private investments to produce walkable, livable, and affordable communities. Thank you for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for this panel? Okay, I think that's it. And I'm sorry that Representative Nierman stepped out for a minute, because I do want to say again that Representative Nierman and Representative Meek have worked hard on this. We heard this bill in the, or this proposed bill in the fall as well as in January. We're hearing it again now. And in the abundance of caution, I'm not going to put a work session on it today. I don't think there's a huge rush on this, and I want to make sure that now that the public is aware of it, that we give ample opportunity before we vote on it in the floor. So I think it's a great bill, but there's not really a reason to rush it through today, so we're going to give it the time it deserves. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and possible work session on HJR 201. Roll it over, the possible work session, to Thursday, February 8th, 8 a.m. And I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session on HB 4007 again. I'll open it up, and again, I'm going to roll over the possible work session to February 8th, 8 a.m. for the document recording fee, so we are not going to be working that bill today. Cassie, could you please read us a summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4007 permits an individual to create a first-time homebuyer savings account within a financial institution and increases the document recording fee from $25 to $75. We have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment changes the limits applicable to a subtraction from federal taxable income specified by annual gross income and filing status. The amendment allows the Department of Revenue to adjust limits based on the percentage of change in the U.S. City Average Consumer Price Index, and includes the Oregon Housing Stability Council in determining supply of homeownership for families and individuals who have an income not more than 100% of median family income, and changes the effective date of the document reporting fee to July 1st, 2018.
Okay. First up, we've got Bill Hall, Ryan McCambridge, and Mike Lehman.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chairs Olson and Sanchez, and members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Bill Hall, and I have had the honor of serving as a Lincoln County Commissioner since 2005. I am the immediate past president of AOC. AOC, the Association of Oregon Counties, is neutral on this bill. I imagine that many of you will recognize this idea. Don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. It's from Jim Collins's classic, Good to Great, and I think it's really appropriate as we talk about HB 4007 today. No rational person will deny that Oregon has a housing crisis of unimaginable proportions. Economic development, the well-being of our children, and the health of our families all suffer because too many Oregonians lack a safe, decent, affordable place to call home. In Lincoln County, restaurant managers and hospital executives are asking me when their employees will have a place to live. Nearly 1,000 of our school children meet the federal definition of homelessness. You know the parable about the boy saving starfish on the beach? Even though our beaches are littered with starfish, some of them are saved. I'll never forget the story of a local nonprofit that helped to get a homeless family into an apartment. The volunteer who shared this story with me said he asked the youngest child what was going to be the best thing about having his own room. The boy said that he would be able to hang a picture on the wall. You no doubt are going to hear from people who acknowledge this problem, but will try to tell you this isn't the way to solve it. But I doubt if they will have a better, more practical approach to putting an additional $50 million plus a year into existing funding pipelines that have been proven to create shelter for our fellow Oregonians. A document recording fee for housing is a tool that has been used in many states. The original Oregon fee was established in 2009 at $15. In 2013, it was increased by $5, with those funds specifically going to housing veterans. The fee is distributed through three funding streams. 10% goes to the emergency housing account, which is flexible dollars, which are used to prevent and end homelessness. The emergency housing account is divided by formula and distributed to community action agencies which serve every county in Oregon. In Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, the Community Services Consortium helps people prevent or end their homelessness through emergency rent assistance, rapid rehousing resources, and case management services. 14% of the document recording fee goes to the Homeownership Assistance Program, which helps people access affordable homeownership. Right now, it's used for education and counseling and down payment assistance. In Lincoln County, the nonprofit Community Land Trust that I started and lead is using down payment assistance money to add 5 homes to its portfolio this year. 76% of the document recording fee goes to the General Housing Account Program, which is used to build and preserve affordable housing. Some of the money, 6%, also goes to help build capacity. So far, that money has been used to help strengthen nonprofit affordable housing developers in communities. The General Housing Account Program has helped to either build or preserve 4,300 units of affordable housing across Oregon, serving seniors, people with disabilities, veterans, families with children, and individuals. Today, as I think about housing, I'm also thinking of my late sister, Kathy, who died at the age of 40 of a brain tumor. That happened in 1993. Kathy's favorite movie was The Wizard of Oz. And of course, whenever I think of that film, I always think of Dorothy's classic line, "There's no place like home." Kathy loved her family and her home above all else in life. Her Southeast Portland home might be considered modest by today's standards, but she filled it with warmth and love, and it provided a space for her daughter to grow up in. Too many Oregonians are denied a loving place to call home today. I ask you, for all of them, for all those now suffering on our streets, and in memory of those who have died on them, to support this bill, because there truly is no place like home. Thank you. I am honored now to pass the microphone to a series of folks who are going to talk more about the specifics of the programs covered by this fee, and there'll also be someone to answer questions at the end.
Chairman Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Ryan McCambridge with Lynn Benton Food Share. We're the regional food bank that serves, obviously, Lynn and Benton counties. I'll speak a little bit about sort of the changing dynamics in food banking and the connections to housing specifically. I've been with Lynn Benton Food Share for 20 years, believe it or not. In that time, I've seen how food banks have changed their approach to addressing the issue of hunger. Oftentimes in the past, food banks were simply more food was the solution. We've changed our thinking in that matter to be more holistic in our thinking, that food is just one piece of the puzzle regarding the issue of hunger. A big piece of that too is housing. Over the years, we often told the recipients of emergency food boxes, "What's the reason why you're coming in for services today?" About 10 years ago, that was medical services, medical debt, health insurance. That has changed over the last 5 years in particular to housing costs. Housing is just eating up all available resources for families so that they have to turn to the food banks in order to make up the difference. They will make it through about 3 weeks. That fourth week of the month, there is just nothing left, and then rent is coming due the first of the month. So they have to seek emergency food to free up $50 or $75 just to make rent. Also, what's been unique in Lynn and Benton counties, and might be a microcosm of the state in particular, is Corvallis has always been a high rent, high housing cost area. It's always been known for that. One solution that families would take is they had a job in Corvallis, but they'd live outside of that. They'd live in Lebanon or Albany, where the housing prices were lower. That is no longer the case, or it's less of a solution now, where housing rent increases are happening even in Lynn County, so that's... And the net effect is the amount of folks seeking services in Corvallis and Albany is 60% higher than it was at the height of the Great Recession in 08-09. Albany and Corvallis in particular have seen this dramatic increase, but we've not seen that same increase in the more rural parts of our service area in Lynn and Benton counties. And a lot of that is tied to market rates of housing. So housing is incredibly important to why our emergency food box numbers continue to be high. We've also seen that when you can stabilize families in housing, then they need less services. Once they fall into that homeless camp, it honestly, you're going to incur much more cost to get them back to just where they were prior to them falling into homelessness. So the connections between housing, hunger, and homelessness are very real. whatever we can do to stabilize families where they're at and then help them on their path to self-sufficiency is the right thing to do. So thank you very much.
My name is Mike Lehman. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Coast Community Action. We're the community action agency that serves Coos and Curry counties. We do housing, energy, weatherization services, as well as run the food pantries or run the delivery system for the food pantries and the Head Start program. I've lived in Coos Bay all of my life. I grew up in a timber family. My parents were astute enough to send me away to school because they were fairly certain I would hurt myself if I continued working in the wood products industry. I will confess at the risk of damaging my credibility, I served 6 years in this body up here, and now have a real job, so to speak. So, you know, the one thing that I've noticed in my history in Coos and Curry counties is housing is no longer an urban problem. We have about 1% vacancy rates. Our 50% of our people in poverty pay over 50% of their income for housing if they can find it. And our traditional model right now for dealing with people in housing is they come in the door, we have money to pay for rental assistance, for security deposits, and we send them out and say, you've got 30 days to find housing. 30 days, they come back in, they don't have housing, we say next on the list until somebody is fortunate enough to find a place to live, to use the programs we have available. We have Section 8 vouchers that go for asking because there's no housing out there. We are in the process and we'll probably break ground with a program for veterans housing, a 10-unit complex called Deer Springs Terraced, so named because they saw deer the first day they were looking at it. That was fairly astute on their part. And it will be about 11 units for dealing with veterans with substance abuse, physical or psychological issues. And they will be in that at, you know, probably somewhere around $500 to $600 a month. We will fill that up almost the day we open it up with Section 8 assistance, veterans assistance. We're unique in Coos and Curry counties is that we have our veteran services programs are partnered in the same building with the VSO programs of both Coos and Curry counties. So we do a tremendous job of connecting up. Again, same problem. They come in, they have a need, we have no place to put them. So we shuffle folks around. Most of that money for that program comes from the housing program through OHCS. The recording fees are a big part of that. This is a significant factor to getting housing on the ground so we can support people in need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? I really want to thank you for coming up from I-5 and then for both of you coming all the way from the coast to make sure that their voice is heard. Thank you very much. Thank you for your prior service and your continuing service. Okay. So I like to try to go back and forth between people who are pro and then people who are either con or neutral. So I'm going to call up Brian Van Borgen, I think the name is. And then John Bartholomew and Ann Ness, you are marked as neutral. So if you wouldn't mind coming up together, that would be great. Brian, would you like to kick it off? Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Olson, Sanchez, members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. Like the chair mentioned, my name is Brian Van Borgen. I am the current Yamhill County Clerk. The Oregon Association of County Clerks wants very much to say first and foremost that we are all strong proponents of all individuals having a safe place to call home. We are, however, also strong proponents of providing equal access to our services, trying to avoid the creation of barriers to that access. We feel that a $75 fee attached to our document recording fee is unacceptable and creates a significant barrier to that access for our customers. The Oregon Association of County Clerks is keenly aware of the troubles many Oregonians face in finding that safe place to call home. We simply feel that this avenue is the wrong one to take in attempting to fix that problem, searching for affordable housing. Y'all know as legislators that your job is to find solutions and to fund those solutions, and our job as administrators is to try to administer those. We also feel strongly that our role is to try to guide you away from making unintended consequences. And that's what we think the higher fee will do, is create a number of unintended consequences that we feel strongly that we need to bring to your attention. That includes placing this burden of finding affordable housing squarely on the backs of just a few people, those folks that record documents in our office. Some people and entities, we feel, may try to avoid filing documents, which could be hazardous to them and their families as they navigate through the life of their properties. Those with multiple documents to record will be hit hard. Severe penalties will be inflicted on those that make a mistake. In our world, if you record a document today that has a typo on it and you need to come back in tomorrow, we can't give you a discount, we can't give you a refund, we have to do it all over again at the same price. The affordable housing fee, we think, has a debatable nexus to whether or not it really should be applied to the recording of documents. We strongly feel that filing documents with your friendly local county clerk's office should be affordable, should be easy, should be accessible to everyone, and that information that we keep in the public record permanently should be available to everyone reasonably. Very much thank you again for your time, and if you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Thank you, Brian.
For the record, my name is Ann Nessie, and I'm testifying for Tex Furnace, Oregon, and I wanted to let you all know that we actually are in favor of the document recording fee. Other states have done it, and it has not been an overburden. They've figured out ways that I'm sure we can utilize those methods to make accurate documents.
Couldn't you say your name for the record?
Huh?
Did you say your name? She did.
Ann,
okay, sorry.
Yeah. However, we have a few questions and suggestions for the second part of, or the first part, the first-time home buyer section of this bill has technical problems that must be addressed to make it better for home buyers who are trying to buy affordable housing. The first written error is in section 3.4. There is no limitation on the amount of contributions, quote, that may be made to or retained in the first-time home buyer's savings account. This needs to be clarified as it is in direct conflict with the rest of the bill. It needs to be clarified because the bill also says that the amount of the account holders do have written restrictions of 50,000 and 10 years in section 4.3 A and B. So they may have been referring to another donor that wasn't the account holder, but it's not clear in that section of the bill. But the definitive part of what I want to testify that I really want you to remember is there's this, the section of the bill for the savings account is that the savings should be deposited, we think, in Tax Fairness Oregon, that should be deposited in the state treasury like 529 savings accounts. And there are several reasons why we think this would be much better for everyone concerned. And as it's written in the bill now, it's in a non-supervised financial institution. The reason we believe this is we must be able to properly enforce the many tax regulations that are in the bill. The current bill has citizens' savings located in a variety of financial institutions with no accurate way to monitor when they take out, or it doesn't encourage savings. It might actually encourage non-savings because they can take it out after the year after they got the tax credit. The other thing that would be really beneficial if you had it in the Treasury is that it would earn more interest for the people concerned. And since we've done that in other savings accounts for people, it would really help the people that are buying homes if it's in a good account. This is absolutely basic, in our opinion, to make sure the written law fulfills its purpose. Without these changes, we will not fulfill the purpose of helping first-time home buyers to save for the down payment on their first home.
Thank you.
Hi. Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Bartholomew. I'm the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon. Housing that's affordable is a priority for AARP Oregon, and especially with our members. About 40% of renters renters 50 years and older in Oregon pay more than 30% of their income on housing, which means they're cost burdened. But more alarmingly, over 39% of renters over 65 pay more than 50% of their income on housing, and their income doesn't generally go up because it's a fixed income. It is more difficult for older Oregonians to be able to find a new place to live and move if the rent is increased to the point that they can no longer afford it. Just simply that they may have more needs such as accessibility, like getting a wheelchair around in the new home, or a tub that has grab bars or something like that. So it is more difficult for people to find a place and to actually move. And it also disrupts their sense of community that they have. They may have community supports where they live now, and that's why affordable housing is a priority for us. Now, we support the $75 document recording fee that is in this proposal. We know that the Housing Trust has been an effective tool for Oregon to help with affordable housing, but it is underfunded. And using this tool, providing more resources for it, is something that we definitely support. Our concern with this bill has to do with the part of the homeownership tax expenditure. You know, we do support increasing homeownership. In fact, it is a key element to building wealth. Homeownership peaked at 69% in 2004, but the housing market collapse has led to much more financial insecurity among older people across America and across Oregon. So even though we support the issue, we're concerned with the way this is structured. We don't believe it is targeted or efficient. It could provide ways to avoid taxation altogether, even for people who need no assistance saving for a down payment. One of the key recommendations that we would make for improving this is to structure it as a credit as opposed to a deduction on your taxes. And the reason for that is lower and middle income people are much less likely to itemize their taxes. And therefore, they're not going to take this. But if it's a credit, they can utilize it more readily than higher income, or at the same level as higher income folks. And having some meaningful limits on who can utilize this so that it is targeted towards low and middle income Oregonians who most need it. So that's my recommendation, and thank you for hearing us.
And so are you're in a neutral position on the bill?
As a whole, we'd like to see some amendments to the section on the tax credit.
Any questions for this panel?
I do.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Brian, two questions from you. We know what the document fee is right now, $20. You mentioned that you thought that this $75 would create unintended consequences. Where do we land? I mean, if we're going to increase that at all, where do you see the people who are coming in paying for document fees, where would they be comfortable with? I'm curious.
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Olson, that's an excellent question. And we've debated that amongst ourselves. And each of us, there are 36 counties in Oregon, so there's at least 37 answers to that question. And half of us say 20 is too much. Just last week, I don't want to get too far into the weeds and hyperbole, but just last week, a citizen in Yamhill County came to our desk and said, $41 to record a death certificate? You gotta be kidding me. And that's our current fee for recording a single page. So to some people, the current rate of $20 is too much. I am completely aware that a lot of transactions, $100 is a blip in the entire transaction that's taking place. But one of the things that we wanted to do is present to the body the range of documents that we record in our offices. And that range of documents is huge, from that simple death certificate to a multi-page document that is recording this a sale of a large retail or commercial property. If you look at Deschutes County in particular, mm-hmm. you'll see that half of the documents that are recorded in 2017 were what many people consider mortgage-related documents. The other half, roughly, are not mortgage-related documents. They would be liens or powers of attorney or death certificates and that type of thing. So the answer is complicated, because not every person coming to our counter is transacting the similar type of product.
So, may I follow up then, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. How often do you see multiple transactions occur?
And Chair Kenny Geyer and House members, this is common to see multiple transactions happen. In a typical transaction, you see one or two. The vast majority of our transactions are one or two. But oftentimes, especially in a situation where a couple is migrating their estate into a trust, or oftentimes as folks try to make their transition, we see this often in folks that are AARP customers mm-hmm. are migrating off into a different type of housing. They're taking their properties, moving it over to a trust. So there's a power of attorney. There's the trust documents themselves. There's all sorts of things. In that scenario, it's not atypical to see five different transactions for the one family.
So can I just have one more question?
One Thank more, you. And then Thank I know you. There's a couple other people
okay.
here.
I have an answer to
Would you like to invite her to respond as well?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we studied in Tax Fairness, Oregon. We studied a lot of different times states move the document recording fee up. And California one, they had a clause that people could apply for if they were low income or it was a hardship for them, they could apply for a lower fee. So it was means tested at the time they were doing it, which made sense.
Okay, so I appreciate you sharing that, because I was almost kind of going to spin off into that question, because John had mentioned and enlightened that he felt that this program was reaching out to both the low income and some middle income.
Write a clause in
yeah law. So you know, I'm thinking to myself, how does this play out then, you know, Brian, for those folks coming in, because we're wanting to reach out to try to kind of help them overall, but now they're going to get tagged with having to pay this fee as well. So it seems kind of, you know, it just seems a little kind of a rub going on here.
And Chair and Vice Chair, are you thinking of a waiver for low income?
I don't know. It hadn't crossed my mind.
That is one of the concepts that we've discussed as well. And back to the concept of creating ideas and administering ideas, the administration of that concept can be overwhelming for an office that does not typically go in that direction. On the surface, that seems like an immense burden to put on a group of people that has no background in case management. So there's a lot to be considered there.
Great. Well, you're generating some good ideas. I want to make sure that the other people on the list have an opportunity to talk. So thank you so much. I think Representative Meek had a question, and was there anyone else who had a question for this panel?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Brian. Yeah, how you doing? Question about the, I understand that you're, and I agree, we want to make sure that our, citizens are able to afford the process of recording very vital and important documents. And if I understand, your role as a county clerk is to record these documents, secure them, and make them available. And one of the things I'm looking at, you talked about the administration of this process. Looking at one of the documents that you guys provided as part of your testimony, you had there's a couple of recording transactions you mentioned as part of that $46 that's going to be raised, or $41 raised to $91 or $106. One of them is recording fee, another one's the land conservation land corner preservation fund, assessment and taxment fund, then the Oregon Land OLIS, Oregon Land Information System. Question to you is, of those transactions that you're recording, how much is the county clerk's office retaining to administer those programs? Because I understand you get zero from the HAT, correct? So out of those other programs, how many dollars or how much of percentage are you receiving out of those funds for administration of the programs?
Chair Kenny Geyer and Representative Meek, thank you for asking that question. Although that's not a topic we really want to dive into regarding the changing of the housing fee, I'm happy to answer that question. And that is a simple 5% of all of those individual additional fees. So the land corner preservation, the assessment taxation, OLIS, all of those fees, the clerk's office would get 5% of whatever those fees are. And those are the only designated fees that go to a particular fund, that being the clerk's office. In 35 of the counties in Oregon, even the $5 true recording fee goes to the county's general fund, and then the recording office then gets to ask for some of that back. The 5% that is attached to those other fees is the only thing that's actually designated to fund the recording systems and fees and all of the clerk's responsibilities. Yamhill County happens to be the weird exception where our office is self-funded, so all of our recording fees start and live in the clerk's office. And the downside of that is everything that we do is funded by the fees that we collect. So the $5 that we collect from recording a death certificate funds recording, passports, marriage licenses, elections. Everything that our office does is funded off of that $5.
So I want to move us on. Did you have something really
quick? I do have one quick.
Really quick? Because right. I am worried about all the other people. Sure. I want to make sure they have a
and
chance.
And anybody can answer this. We were talking about the problem of being a case manager and all of those sorts of things. What if it was based on a sliding scale based on the value of the project? So your document recording fee would be based on the value of the project. So that houses would be something much less than, say, large development.
I'm going to suggest that any ideas like this that the committee has that wants come, because I think there's some constitutional issues with that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be in the position here of answering that, and there may be someone who's coming after. I know John Van Landingham is well-versed in these issues. So I'm not going to ask you to respond to that right now. You're like, thank you. All the ideas on the table are welcome, and we will have some robust conversations in the next 48 to 72 hours. I do want to just point out, though, that thank you, all of you, for your testimony. And, John, you had mentioned some concern about structuring the homebuyer savings account as a deduction or subtraction as opposed to a tax credit.
Right.
And I do want to just – that kind of made me think I want to alert my committee members that we do have an amendment that is on here that really looks at how do we meaningfully cap the eligibility on that part of the bill. And rather than moving just with numbers taken out of the air, I think there was a lot of really great effort on the part of the realtors who brought that idea forward, and advocates and stakeholders to say, you know, what's a meaningful way to base it. And so the amendment has a different structure on the cap part of your question. Which was, I think you both raised this question, which is based on 250% of area medium income for Portland, because we wanted to be able to cover, as you know, all of the places that are the most expensive around the state for a family of four. So it caps it at 250, and the full benefits are at 200% of that. And so there's not a cliff, but a graduating scale on that. And I just want to say, given that people in this room probably know me as the person that promotes tax credits, particularly refundable tax credits, to really help low-income people. Certainly that was a question that I entered this with. But the beauty, I think, of this bill is that we've put two concepts together. The document recording fee, you know, frankly, even if you made it a tax refundable tax credit, it is really hard for people of lower income to be able to save for a house. And that's the beauty of the 14% of the doc fee that goes to home ownership, goes to actual down payment assistance. And so and the bill also says we're trying to increase that from 80% of AMI to 100%, because we know that people at 80% are really having a hard time buying a home. So what this is really doing and making a very strategic effort at building our home ownership back up. It was, I think, at 69% or something pre-recession, and then a lot of people lost homes. They got bought out by other people who were then able to rent it out. We've increased the number of renters, decreased the number of home ownership, and to reverse that trend where we are now somewhere around 46 in the country in home ownership, we really need a concerted strategy. And so the beauty of this bill, I think, is that we have one strategy for the very low-income people, which is the document recording fee home ownership program, and then from those that are 100% on, with dwindling benefits up to 250%, it's the deduction. So just to let you know, there has been a lot of talk about that, but I think stringing this together and trying to help people, knowing how expensive housing is the beauty of this package and why, part of the reason that why these concepts are together. But thank you for bringing all these ideas. I want to move on to the next panel. Emily Ryman, Margaret Salazar, and Martha McClendon.
Just hand over this. You don't think you can pay for this?
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was not a lot of paperwork.
You can continue in the corner to discuss ideas.
Chair Kinnegayer, members of the committee, my name is Emily Ryman. I'm here today as the executive director of NEDCO, the Neighborhood Economic Development Corporation, which is an affordable housing and asset building nonprofit serving Lane, Marion, and Clackamas counties. I'm here to talk about the 14% of the doc recording fee that Chair Kinnegayer just mentioned that goes to support homeownership for low-income families. NEDCO is one of a network of homeownership centers across the state that are supported by that 14%. We provide a range of education, counseling, and down payment assistance to help low-income working-class families achieve the dream of homeownership. We know that homeownership has been a pathway to stability and financial prosperity for working-class families for generations. Homeownership offers children the stability to stay in the same school system, to stay in the same neighborhood. It offers the retiring generation financial stability in their retirement. It's a way to pass assets to the next generation to ensure that your children have a better shot than you did in life. This is why homeownership has been the American dream for so long. We live in a time and in a state where homeownership scholarship is increasingly out of reach for the very families that could benefit the most from it. As Chair Kinnegar mentioned, Oregon ranks currently 48th in the nation for homeownership affordability, which is not a statistic that we should be comfortable with. We also know that the homeownership gap for people of color is increasing, is headed in the wrong direction in the state. So if we don't do something to change those dynamics, we risk generations of Oregonian families being excluded from homeownership and excluded from the financial and housing stability that comes with it. Luckily, we have this network of homeownership centers that has proven tools and proven methods to help low-income families achieve homeownership. We know that homeowners who participate in our education and counseling program were less likely than average families to go through foreclosure during the downturn. We know that those families build assets at a rate incredibly higher than their corresponding low and moderate income families who are renters. But the resources that are out there are just not enough. That 14% of the DOC recording fee doesn't go far enough to address the challenges that we face. NEDCO in our three-county service area serves between 500 and 600 families a year in our education and counseling programs that want to become first-time homebuyers. In the last biennium, we had down payment assistance for 12 families. 12 families across Lane County, Marion County, and Clackamas County. It's just not even a drop in the bucket compared to the need that is out there. So I'm here today to encourage you to pass HB 4007 and to increase the DOC recording fee to $75. And I don't say that lightly because we work with the very families that will be paying this recording fee. We work with low-income families who, when they achieve that dream of homeownership, will be contributing into this resource. And I periodically stop by our classes and I stop by counseling sessions to ask families who are in this situation. So these are families at 70 and 80% of median income, how they feel about this DOC recording fee and would they be willing to pay more? And universally, they say yes. Because although they are the families that are the least able to pay this type of fee, they're also the families that have a front row view to the work that it's doing and to the housing crisis that our state is facing. And they are willing to do their part to step up and solve this problem. So I encourage you to consider the full increase to $75 and know that that will make a huge difference to Oregon families that want to achieve that dream of homeownership. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kinnegar, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, and I'm Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 4007. Since the inception of the document recording fee in 2009, the fee has generated over $94 million to provide housing opportunity for the Oregonians who need it the most. And as you've heard through the other testimony this morning, this critical resource provides emergency housing assistance, down payment assistance, and education for first-time homebuyers, as well as supporting the development and preservation of affordable housing across the state. And just a few statistics for you. Through the GHAP program, which is the development side of the program, we financed more than 4,300 homes across the state. Just in the last biennium, we helped 144 homeowners achieve that dream of homeownership, as you just heard described through the program. So those are just a few of the successes. And one of our most recent accomplishments, just last Friday, our Housing Stability Council approved awards to four new veteran housing developments in communities across the state, which will provide construction dollars to build 71 permanent homes for veterans in four communities: North Bend, Klamath Falls, Oregon City, and Northeast Portland. So diverse communities. And of course, permanent housing is a critical component of our work to end veteran homelessness and our fight to keep the promise to our veterans that if you serve our country, you should not come home and face the specter of homelessness. We're working hard to house all of our homeless veterans, and permanent housing is a critical resource. And just to be very clear, these 71 homes would not be built without the document recording fee resources. That's just one clear example of how we're helping to directly serve those in need throughout the state. While we are always grateful to administer one-time funds, and we want to recognize the committee for your leadership in the last legislative session and the remarkable historic investments that the legislature made, those one-time investments are just not the same as the unique value and importance of a document recording fee that provides an ongoing and dedicated funding stream to support the full spectrum of housing and homeless service investments. With an ongoing source of funds, our agency can plan ahead to better meet and anticipate the housing needs across the state and to move the needle on initiatives such as ending veteran homelessness. And our partners can also plan as well. So if we're trying to tackle this issue, issue. We can't take it year by year, month by month. We need to have a sustained and critical effort to be able to make an impact. Many of our efforts, particularly the homeless efforts, rely on sustained hard work and partnerships from nonprofits, housing developers, service providers, private investors, philanthropy, the healthcare sector, educators, and employers. Ongoing funds allow these partnerships to blossom and flourish so that we can make a real impact that is multi-sector. Over the past several months, OHCS has traveled across the state on a listening tour as part of our statewide housing plan. We've heard that housing needs across the state are significant. You've heard those voices today in testimony. And we also heard loud and clear that there is a great need for flexible funds to help local communities step up and respond to those housing challenges. We have posted on OLIS for you a summary document that details all of the voices that we heard throughout that listening tour, everything from housing practitioners to the Oregonians who are directly the clients that we're serving through all of our programs. We encourage you to take a look at that report because it really does bring out some pretty compelling stories and that firsthand information about what's going on the ground. And I think what you'll see in there is a theme that communities need the flexible resources and the sustained resources from the document recording fee to be able to respond locally to the housing crisis. OHCS thanks the committee for your continued leadership on these issues, and we encourage you to see the document recording fee, as we do, as a critical resource in the fight for Oregon's housing stability. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Kinnegeyer and members of the committee. My name is Martha McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives. We are a statewide provider of affordable housing, and in Clackamas County are a homeless service provider. I would echo what you've heard earlier today about both the need for affordable housing. We know that in Clackamas County, it's in the over 10,000 units that we are short of affordable housing. Across the state, that number is probably 100,000 units. I would echo what you've heard about homelessness. In Clackamas County, we have too many children experiencing homelessness. 60% of the people in Clackamas County experiencing homelessness are in families with kids, and that is typical of suburban and rural counties. We, in our homeless service programs in Clackamas County, turn away 8 or 9 out of every 10 that calls us for service because we simply haven't got the resources to meet their needs. When somebody calls for eviction prevention services, even the most responsible ones who call and say, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent next week, we have to say, call me back when you actually have an eviction notice in hand, because that's how we have to prioritize allocating those resources. So the demand across the state is enormous. The capacity to respond to this need in terms of the organizations that do this work is also enormous. The housing authorities, the nonprofit housing providers, the nonprofit social service agencies, the community action agencies can do more if there is more resource. At Northwest Housing Alternatives, we have a pipeline of projects now that are waiting for funding. These are sites that we have control of. We've done the conceptual work. We've done some of the architectural work. And we're waiting for a competitive funding cycle that will come up for any number of them that can get them to move forward. We are thrilled with an award from Oregon Housing last week for a veterans housing project that we will do in Oregon City. That will be 24 units. It's based on a model that we recently completed in Aloha, a project that OHCS funded a year earlier for 20 units. At that project that just opened, we leased the project up in about 2 weeks. Half of those households are coming straight from homelessness. Now, they might be coming from a transitional program or from a shelter, some of them coming directly off the streets. Again, we know that there's an awful lot that can be done. In terms of the document recording fee, I want to put a little bit of context. The median home sales price in Oregon right now is $320,000. In the metro area, it's north of $400,000. Typical closing costs for a house of that magnitude are going to be over $3,000. Increasing this fee from $20 to $75 is a very, very tiny piece of it. Yes, there are homeowners who have very low incomes who may have bought their home years ago, who may be needing to do a refinance or may be needing to change the ownership, the title of the home because of a change in the family's composition, a death, a marriage, a divorce, any number of things like that. One of the things that I think you should think of is that The document recording fee says the fee must be paid. It doesn't say who must pay that fee. So if a county wanted to provide a subsidy for lower income households, that is within their ability right now with the document recording fee. There are so many reasons why an increase of this amount would be important. One of the things I think I would put as high on that list is the capacity to do small projects in rural Oregon. In the urban part of the state, in areas where you're doing 50 units, 100 units, you can leverage the low-income housing tax credit, the federal resource that brings equity to a deal. In smaller communities in the state where the size of the project that you should be building is 20 to 25 to 30 units, those can't leverage those. They really need a deep subsidy, and it really needs to come from the state, and the document recording fee is the primary tool to do that. So I would encourage you to support House Bill 4007 at the $75 level. It can make a remarkable difference in a very short period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Martha, just a quick question related to the prioritizing of folks that are getting, you know, they're trying to help get or to receive help to pay the rent. I know that the 72-hour notice process, you can't even file it to the 8th. And so is there any way to reconsider that? Because you're doing two things. We're going to give them a notice that will go on their record when they try to get back into the rental market again. Is that the only process in which you can help them try to stabilize or get help? I know you said it as a priority level. But
we
talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Meek, we receive about 200 calls a month for eviction prevention services and rapid rehousing services. Our ability to serve them is about 15 to 20 a month. So we really have to have a way to winnow that down, saying who is at greatest risk, who is at imminent risk, who is currently in a situation that needs to be resolved quickly. We spend an awful lot of time on the phone with folks saying, have you seen if you could borrow some money from family or friends? Can you get an advance on your paycheck? Can you double up and couch surf with somebody? Can you go ask your church for a few hundred bucks? Those are the kinds of strategies that we counsel people to use to avoid homelessness or to get back into housing as quickly as possible, because we simply haven't got the resource. Our eviction prevention rapid rehousing program right now has funding, governmental funding, combination of state and federal resources and county resources from Clackamas County that cover about 70% of the costs. We raise the other 30 to 40% of the cost for that program through fundraising and through earned revenues we have from our other lines of business. So we have to have a way to winnow the calls, and that that degree of crisis really is it.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Okay. Okay, we've got three people left. Two are marked in favor, and one didn't mark anything. Do you mind coming up together? Sean Jillians, Barbara Ross, and Mike Kinsella. So last three that I have on the list here.
Thank you.
Sean, would you like to have the first word here? Or the last word?
How about the last
word? All right. Barbara, why don't you start us off?
Hi. Again, I'm Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. I'm Barbara Ross. I'm from the Portland area, and I'm here on behalf of the League of Women Voters to support this bill. You've heard testimony already that gave you the details. I'd like to just tell you about one person in Portland. Our church met this woman 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when she was in shelter. She got into housing, and we had a team from our church who's followed her ever since. She has an amazing array of survival techniques, some which are marginally legal, others very difficult. She has two kids, one in the first grade and one in the sixth grade, and now that her kids are in school, she's actively looking for work and trying to develop her skills so that she can move. But right now, her welfare check is about $500 a month. Her rent is $750. What she does is every month she sells her food stamps in order to have enough money to pay her rent. She patches together. It still leaves her a little short, and so she patches together gifts from friends. She has a little circle of friends who come through with $20 or $30 a piece to make her able to pay her rent. If she doesn't pay her rent on time, she has an additional $75 late fee that she has to pay on top of that. She feeds herself and her children by going to food banks and going to free places where families can get food in the Portland area. She has no money to go to the laundromat, so one friend regularly feeds her, gives her about $20 or $30 a month to go to the laundromat once in a while. She washes all of her boys' clothes in the bathroom sink and hangs it up to dry, and sometimes it isn't dry because the weather is so damp, her things don't dry. This is a woman who's trying to get ahead. She's a good mother. She's paying attention to her kids. She's volunteering in her school. But through the years, a number of times agencies have helped her to pay her rent or to pay part of it. And so here, 5 years later, she's still in that apartment. She is housed. Her life is not fun. Her life is difficult. But she's a good parent. She's dedicated. She's really dedicated to taking care of her children. And so that emergency rental assistance from some agencies that get some of this money has helped to keep make it possible. And again, selling your food stamps every month and having to piece together food donations in order to feed your family is a really difficult way to live. But she still is in that apartment, and she is in a very difficult way, but she does have a very sympathetic worker. Her welfare worker is very sympathetic to her, has helped her get this volunteer position at school, and is saying, get yourself ready to go to work, because now, since your kids are in school, you need to go to work. So this is a woman who's had a very difficult past. Her mother was 15 when she was born, and so she's had a difficult past, but she's really working to be a good parent to her children, and that emergency assistance through the years has made it possible for her to stay in that apartment. Our safety net system is frayed, but we need to do everything we can to make sure that people that are in housing stay there, and emergency assistance is a really important path to that. So thank you for the opportunity to comment, and we urge your support.
Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Sanchez, and Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on House Bill 4007. My name is Mike Kinsella, Executive Director of Oregon Locus. As I mentioned earlier, we are a coalition of responsible developers active throughout the state of Oregon and very much interested in being a voice for walkable, livable, and sustainable communities across the state that are economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable. We are here, of course, to support our strong to voice our strong support for House Bill 4007 and to increase the document recording fee to $75. Our state must invest more in affordable housing opportunity. It's an imperative, especially deeply affordable housing, and expanding that investment through a small increase to the document recording fee is the right way to do it. The document recording fee creates critical resources, investment, and housing opportunity to benefit Oregonians statewide, and a $75 fee per document would generate a total of $105 million per biennium. Funds from the document recording fee address the entire spectrum of housing needs. And critically for Oregon Locus, the General Housing Account Program will receive 70% of the document recording fee revenue. This program helps develop and preserve safe, stable, and affordable housing. Since 2010, over 4,300 units have been built or preserved in part through this fee, and we must increase those numbers to meet the statewide need. Accordingly, we urge your support in House Bill 4007 at the $75 level. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. thank you for the opportunity to back clean up on this particular bill, which I think is almost there, and we're working hard to get it across the finish line. Some of the changes, obviously, are just technical in nature as we work through sort of the kinks on the bill that was built off of last year's efforts. And ironically enough, I pulled up my notes, and there they were. I've probably come to you guys, it feels like 10 different times, citing numbers and who can afford what and what the issues are. The first part of the bill, obviously, is the first-time homebuyer savings account. I think we've come up with a really good package with the Dash 1 amendment, and we've got a few more issues to work on there. The sunset is a little problematic with the length of these particular savings account and how quickly it sunsets, and whether or not we're even going to have financial institutions offering them if the sunset is too quick. So I think that's one of the issues we'd like to address. What that particular portion of the bill is trying to address is in 2009, as we were running up to the cliff in the housing bubble, 44% of buyers in Oregon were first-time home buyers. That has dropped last year to 28%. We have a real need to try and get first-time home buyers back in there. And so this particular program is aimed at those folks who aren't necessarily benefiting from the DOC recording fee because their income is 100% of the area median income or 120%. But those folks still have a hard time purchasing a home now with our housing crisis. And we've sort of cited some of the statistics to you all of how much it takes in particular areas to be able to afford the median home value there. And it's well north of 100 or 120%. So that's what that's aimed at. A couple of issues have come up throughout the day in testimony from others. One is whether or not the document recording fee has a significant nexus to housing. When we originally supported the bill in 2009, we found that it did. It does provide, as you guys have heard before, down payment assistance programs at the state level. The large majority of it is for rental housing and preservation of affordable rental units, or hopefully as we move forward, development of more subsidized affordable units. The housing is a spectrum, and if we can get people on those lower rungs of the ladder and moving up, we saw that as a benefit to potential homeowners as well. Obviously, the 10% that goes to homeless programs too has become more acute than when we originally put the program in place in 2009. There was mention of whether or not this should be a credit or a deduction. This is actually a deduction above the line from taxable income, so you do not have to itemize your deductions in order to take advantage of it. It's very similar to if you invest in your 401k and you take that money off the top. Believe it or not, I know this legislative body mandated a statewide system for 401ks, but there are actually private 401ks out there. They have survived without state regulation. They are in financial institutions, and believe it or not, people actually do accurately report them on their taxes. So having this program housed within the Treasury, while that may sound like a good idea, it would cause a significant financial burden for Treasury to administer it when we're not certain we're going to get enough people in yet. And the better route for this particular program is the private sector. You would report on your taxes under the penalty of perjury, just like you do any other deduction that you take, that this was in there. The other issue that was brought up on the language as far as how it's structured and what can be put in there, the limitations for how much you can put in are how much you can have deducted from your income. We're not going to say that there's a limitation on what you can put in there. Anyone else can put whatever they want in there to assist the potential home buyer. You just don't get the benefit of the tax savings, but to limit who can put in there or limit how much they can put in there really isn't necessary in this particular bill. They're not enjoying any tax savings. There's no tax savings for doing it. So that's why you have the limitations where you do. I think with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to end it for now with a TBD, as I know we're meeting tomorrow to discuss a little more of the technical nature. I know Mr. Cosgrove is here from the Bankers Association. They have one technical fix too as far as the accounts and how they'll be set up. We certainly want to heed their advice and have their amendment in there, because if financial institutions don't offer this particular package for their clients, then we won't have a package at all. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Questions for this panel? I will just say a few things then. Thank you, first of all, Sean, for doing the cleanup on my my attempt at defending the deduction, and I didn't do it right. But I think conceptually, I hope that you agree that this is a part of a continuum of where we're really trying to help move the needle on home ownership that we know is so critical for our state. So thank you for that. I want to just say a couple things that I've heard, you know, today or didn't hear. Or I was spacing out or something. So I just wanted to affirm a few of the things that I think about in terms of this bill. I do think it's a continuum. I support strongly both pieces of the bill. In terms of supply, there's some good statistics here that's on OLIS in materials from 211 that shows how much housing is like the number one, far outweighs anything else that people are calling. This is just really, as has been said by others in this room today, it's really changed. It used to be housing was kind of a three or four tier. When I went to do constituent coffees, it was around financial concerns because of bankruptcy around healthcare or education, K through 12. And now it's housing, housing, housing. And, you know, certainly in Portland, we're stepping over people on the streets. I mean, you know, it's those, and then it's the not visible, the people who are spending more than 30 or even 50% of their income. So I think supply, I just want to direct you to the materials here. 211 has said that they can do this for the whole state. They have a couple counties in here, and they're happy to send you information on where your county is in terms of the 211 calls they get. I also just want to say Bill Hall, commissioner from Lincoln County, kicked it off, and AOC in their retreat that they had, Association of Oregon Counties, last summer, 35 out of 36 counties marked housing as their number one concern. Mm-hmm. I think that is what moved them, despite the county clerks having concerns, moved them from where they used to be opposed a couple of years ago, last year, into a neutral position, because they're weighing the different stakeholders that they're responsible for, and they're hearing from a lot of county commissions, we have got to do something. I want to just reiterate the nature of, in my view, the need for long-term, Director Salazar really, really spoke to this, as did other people, but the need for ongoing support, the shelter system. You know, this committee was very supportive, I thought, in approaching Ways and Means and saying we need more money for emergency housing account and state homeless assistance program, and on top of the 10 million continuing service level, we got an additional $30 million one time. But the problem is these community action agencies can't go out and acquire buildings and outfit them with beds and hire people more than a year and a half when it's like, oh, that's one time. So I think that long-term nature, I think, Mike, you have really pointed, as did Director Salazar, about the need for in the supply. You can't just, if you have a two-year cycle and you know what you have in the 2 years, it takes several years for developers to plan. And if they know that funding is going to be there on an ongoing basis, if they start planning now, the project comes to fruition or goes for a proposal 3 or 4 years from now. If we're going to get on top of the housing crisis, we need an enhanced level of ongoing support. That doesn't mean we're not going to still aim to get whatever general funds we can for some of the projects that come before us, but I think that ongoing nature is really important. I do want to mention, in terms of veterans, I'm not sure if this was said, but this program for the homeownership is also used for repairs or remodeling when veterans come home and have a home but need to be able to repair it because of new disabilities they have. I think that's a really, really critical piece that I was not even aware of last year when we talked about this bill. I didn't realize it could be used for that, and that's one of the ways that is really a critical service that we could be doing for people who have served our country. And then lastly, on in materials, we didn't hear as much this morning from healthcare industry or economic development, but I know that there's a lot of supportive letters there. One Oregon Economic Development Association has a letter of support. I think it's, you know, we've said it in previous meetings. We don't mean to beat ourselves over the head with it, but the critical nature for economic development to have a stable housing base. So those are just some of the things that I wanted to either reaffirm that was said here or maybe has been said in previous testimonies. So I know we still have a lot of work to do, and this committee, you know, this bill has to go through because it's got a revenue piece and a ways and means piece. It's got a lot of different committees to get to. And so we need to keep it moving, and yet we want to have all the conversations needed to have this be the best bill that it can be. So we'll have a lot of active conversations with this. And with that, I think we get out a little early. Quite amazing. So I'm going to close the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4007 with a reminder that we're rolling over a possible work session for Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, February 8th. And we are adjourned.